The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason Leisure's still here.
Hello.
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
I know if I write something really critical, I'm back in there next day and I will see that person face to face. So I better write responsibly. That doesn't mean pull punches.
No.
But that means what you write needs to be well supported, and it shouldn't be something that you'd have a problem saying to that person's face.
Jason Leisure.
Down to Wyoming or Montreal, and two totally different types of trips, and I went with the Old West mountains and bears and bisons and type trip. You know, this is my rugged wilderness story. I got a good scrape, good gash on my leg from one of our expeditions. And by expedition, I mean that the rental car was a Ford Expedition, and I caught my leg on the door at one point and got a little scrape.
Boy, that's the kind of thing that could only happen in Wyoming. Am I right? Yeah.
Only there. That's their postcard. That's their slogan speaks. Only in Wyoming.
I mean,
only in Wyoming could you catch yourself in the leg when you're shutting your door to your truck.
You got to understand something. If we leave the country, there's no coming back here. Is there any special country you want to go to? Wyoming. No, Wyoming. That's not a country. That's all right. I'm going to take care of it.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Tanny's got a drop for everything. Jason Leisure joining us here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. There's a lot that I would like to talk with Jason Leisure about, but Spiegs has got a ton of football stuff that he wants to throw at you first. So I'm just going to leave it to my partner here.
Thank you. I have something to throw at Spiegs too, so after we're done with this.
All right. Oh, well, look, we got something. Everybody's got something for everybody.
Pew, pew, pew.
This is the way it's supposed to work. Jason, last year, the Chicago Bears offensive line had a ranking throughout the season on Pro Football Focus of like 22. Every once in a while, they'd be up at like 20. Sometimes they'd be down at like 25 from week to week. I am looking at the ProFootballFocus.com NFL offensive line rankings right now on the 7th of July. Would you care to hazard a guess, or do you know where they have the Chicago Bears' new look offensive line?
Oh, let's see. You said they're usually low 20s. They've made some improvements. I'm going to guess 18th.
They would be fourth in the in the entire NFL. The Eagles, the Broncos, the Bills, and then the Bears. Things are set to look a lot different in Chicago. Not only is the offensive line remolded, it's also perhaps the most improved unit in the NFL. And they talk about Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright as being already a promising young duo before they get to the guys in the middle. I'm excited about the guys in the middle, but just throwing Braxton Jones, we have no idea who the left tackle is.
No one's seen Braxton Jones, including Jason Leisure.
One of the things I learned all the years doing Levitard Show is that if somebody ever asks you to guess something and you actually do know the answer, you have to guess wildly off. Otherwise, it's very anticlimactic.
It's very Stugatz of you.
Yes. If Spiegs is like, can you guess where the Bears are? And I'm like, well, I just read they were fourth. And then he would be like, oh, well, that was it.
That killed the bit.
Good job. Good job.
You have
Jason.
To guess way high if it's low and guess way low if it's high.
Nice work. So you knew they were fourth. It's outrageous, isn't it?
It's incredible because I don't remember the last time they were top 10. Not in the time I've been covering them. I don't think they have been. Even in 2018, were they top 10? They might have been. It's been a struggle. They've gone cheap across two administrations now, tried to go cheap or try with either low salary cap investment or late draft picks for some of those spots. But I think I assume that they're assuming Braxton Jones is healthy. And man, fourth seems so high. I could see him being top half of the league if we're assuming Braxton Jones is a starting left tackle. But there's a lot to like there. I mean, we all like Darnell Wright at right tackle. And on paper, this is a very good interior offensive line with the acquisitions, the trade acquisitions of Tooney and Jackson and signing Drew Dahlman.
I think we've probably given Jackson a little bit more credit than he might deserve, considering his play last year. And I get it's a position change.
And it's a Detroit familiarity thing.
Yeah, I know.
That's why we're giving
him the Ben Johnson bump. I think everybody is, including the Bears, including Ryan Poles in the checkbook. I think those interior linemen, it's something like $160 million over the next 3 years is on the books for them. I mean, that better get you in the top 10. And it's interesting to see them ranked that high, Spiegs, without definitive word on who the starting left tackle is even going to be. I mean, you talk about Braxton Jones. Is he going to come back healthy? I mean, even if he does, he might not be the guy. But I think that an upgraded interior with Darnell Wright on the right side, and a baseline, a bare minimum of Braxton Jones or better at left tackle, that's pretty good. Fourth feels high, but definitely top half of the league makes sense to me.
Can you give me that list one more time? The top five, Speaks?
The top five.
Because there was a line that I was like, wait, did I miss them?
It starts with the Eagles, and then it goes to the Broncos. The Denver Broncos! Buffalo Bills. The Chicago Bears at 4, the Indianapolis Colts at 5.
Little surprised the Ravens aren't on there, considering the type of running game that they provided last year and you would expect would provide this year.
All the way down at 17.
Okay.
That's weird, man.
All right. So, yeah. Do we know what the Bears offensive line was ranked last year? Preseason. We need to find that out.
Preseason, I think they were 10 last year because the Bears, they dominate the offseason. We're back-to-back offseason champs here, Leisure.
Everyone, including the Bears and including me, was overly optimistic about their offensive line last year. I didn't think 10th, but I thought league average. I thought that would be a league average offensive line last year, and it wasn't even close. Well, it was not even close.
I would quibble with that. I think they probably were around league average, and I know that the sack total is high, but I think that we have the quarterback copping to the fact that he played a major role, salute, in that sack number being as high as it was. They were not good, but I don't think that they were an absolute disaster last year.
Depends what the grading you use is. I mean, if I'm looking at that, I'm saying Nate Davis, complete zero, and Braxton Jones didn't get better before he got hurt. And those are huge problems. I mean, you thought Nate Davis would be good when he played, and then it turns out he barely ever played. And you thought Braxton Jones would be at least a little bit better, and I don't think he was. I think he was headed toward a pretty bad season if he had stayed healthy and been on the field. It wasn't going well at the time he got hurt.
I use Lawrence Football Focus, LFF. It's a new thing that's going on, and people seem to like it. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, Chris Collinsworth, okay. Big fan of yours.
He's going to invest.
Yeah, I think so.
But what you notice with all the good offensive lines,
like $500.
When you look at Philly and Detroit and Baltimore, and all, it's huge investment. It's not a bunch of smoke and mirrors. It's not a bunch of, oh, we found this guy that no one else wants. Here's Sam Mustipher at center, and here's Braxton Jones, a late-round pick out of a college you've never heard of. It's all first- and second-round picks and big, expensive free agents.
That's true. This is the time for list because we're in the dark period before camp starts, and we only got 2 more weeks before camp start. At least the Bears camp start. One camp will start next week, or 2 camps will start next week because of the Hall of Fame game.
Wow.
Is on the way. But this is the time of year where we start looking at lists. The top 100 will come out, and people won't be on it. We went through a list yesterday of the 25 under 25, and Caleb wasn't on it, which was I was wondering if that was surprising or not surprising that he wouldn't be on a top 25 under 25.
Who made the list?
Hold on.
Who wrote the list?
Steve Palazzolo, formerly of Pro Football Focus.
But not currently of Lawrence Football Focus.
No, but he might be available, though.
He might be. I'll have to see if I can get him.
There were 2 quarterbacks in the top 5, C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels, but that was it for the entire top 25.
Very worthy picks, both of them. Lawrence, would you agree that the national media, when it comes to Caleb Williams, is at least moderately tilted against him?
I think there is a large contingent of people who have been looking for the confirmation bias of their pre-draft feelings on Caleb Williams. Yes.
And I think if that's what you want, then you can pull that, you could extrapolate that from last season, and you can say, well, he held the ball too long, he was too tentative, you know, the interception streak is nice, but, you know, you have to take shots downfield, and it takes none of the problems into account. It takes none of the absolute incompetent coaching from top to bottom, other than probably Thomas Brown. It takes none of that into account. It takes none of the O-line problems into account. None of DJ Moore's inconsistency or moodiness into account. None of the failures of the running game into account. None of the defense's late season just complete collapse, so that you're playing basically out of the shotgun, trying to throw back into games starting in the second quarter. It takes none of that into account.
Do you watch the quarterback show on Netflix?
No, I don't. And I know it's popular, and I'm sure it's really good, but I get enough football.
It was really good last year, Lawrence. You watched
I watched the first episode today.
Is that where Cousins said that he felt misled by the Falcons?
Kirk Cousins, I find that he's really great on this, and it makes me like him more than I want to on this show. But watching the Jared Goff stuff, like I'm trying to watch it and you know, kind of reverse engineering some stuff, Speaks, because I figure if I watch what Jared Goff is doing, I'll find out more about Ben Johnson, and maybe we'll have some content that we can bring to the people that aren't watching it.
I think that's thoroughly fair. That's good.
Like, yeah. But hearing Jared Goff still be mad about the trade, like he was as honest as I've
mad
heard.
About the Rams trade. Mm-hmm.
He felt like he was not. That they did not communicate well with him.
Wow.
And that they kind of left him out on an island, and that he had talked with Sean McVay, and 30 seconds later it was on Twitter. Like, he was real mad about that still.
Hmm.
And seeing, like, we've joked about the way that he's been embraced in Detroit. I didn't realize to the depth of it that now Jared Goff chants start at Red Wings games and Tigers games. Like, and it's just become kind of a thing. And I think that that's cool for a guy that really didn't spend any time anywhere other than California through, you know, his first 25 years of life, to now find a place that where people like him and he feels at home. I think it's kind of dope.
But he's still mad about the trade. What part of that resonates with you, Lawrence? Because I know that I have gotten a raw deal at work before, and I think everybody has at different points. But after a certain point, I mean, that trade was 5 years ago. After a certain point, usually, I mean, everything works out. Sometimes those bad things that happen are the best thing that could have happened.
And it's clearly the best thing that could have happened
for him.
It
opens the door to something that never could have happened otherwise. And since going to Detroit, he has gotten his money. He has gotten his winning. He has gotten great individual improvement.
Found himself like a wife.
It's also
like you said, he's completely beloved there. So, I mean, Where would you guys fall on that, on still being mad 5 years later when it has worked out so well for
you? I get it, because it's about process. It's about I took what happened and I did my best with what happened, and it's worked out for both teams,
It depends what drives him, though. Like, for me to sit in the negative headspace of some time getting screwed 5 years ago. Is it about 5 years ago? Yeah, it is. Like, I mean, for some reason, it's like that doesn't do me any good. I don't function well in that headspace. You know what I mean? So I don't want to sit in that. But maybe he does. Maybe he's using that for his edge.
I didn't get the sense that he's using it. The way it came off to me was, I trusted all of these people, and no one here told me what was going on, and I'm frustrated by that.
I get it.
The way that he talked about Brad Holmes, and because he was like, that day when it was announced, he said he kept getting calls from a number that he didn't recognize, and he didn't want to pick up the phone. And then he was like, oh, and it was Brad Holmes. He's like, we're so excited to have you, Jarrett. Like, we are so. And then Dan Campbell called him, and the way that they approached smoothing that part of it over, like, instead of him feeling like it was an exile, it made him feel like he was welcome in that place. I thought that was kind of a cool introspective thing to find out about him.
That is a rare example to that trade of it's so unusual in the NFL for one team or one person to know something that everybody else doesn't. I think it's a fatal mistake that GMs make, thinking I know something that the other 31 don't, because it's usually just not the case. And that was, because I remember thinking, okay, well, that's just, they've got to take something back salary-wise to make this work. They're going to need a starting quarterback as they go in their rebuild. and I'm sure they're going to draft one the next year. And I still kept thinking every year, do the Lions not realize they need to draft a quarterback? And they were right.
So, Jason, when you were out in Wyoming, did you see sunrise over the turquoise mountains, messenger birds in sight? I mean, did you see like beauty? Did you see true beauty that you've been able to bring back here with you and feel in your everyday Chicagoland life?
For me, it was a great appreciation of the outdoors, of a landscape that you don't usually, that you don't see here. And I think Lawrence has the same affinity. I don't know about you, Spiegs, if you're into this too, but when you go out west to like Arizona, Colorado, California, just driving around out there has such a different feel to it.
It's quiet. Like part of the reason that I love going to Arizona and to Vegas, to be honest, usually outside of Vegas where I go hiking, is because it's quiet. And it's such a difference from what I'm used to. Like I spent my whole life in a place where it's big buildings and a beautiful lake. So to go someplace where you have like a fun like cityscape where there's mountains in the backgrounds and there's these oranges and reds and yellows like in your periphery and the sun shines 315 days
there's that
out of the year, like that part helps quite a bit. I enjoyed, Jason and I were on Fox with Tina Nguyen on Sunday, and I enjoyed getting the other part of the story of Wyoming.
It's the stuff
The stuff that your daughter said about the trip.
Oh, man, my kids love to run their mouths. Well, they get that from their mother.
Whoa!
Wow.
Hey!
Wow, it's a good thing she doesn't listen to this at all.
No, that's not true at all, actually. I'm the one that has a microphone in front of me 24-7.
Seriously, chatterbox.
My wife is not like that at all.
I just loved how your oldest daughter played ombudsman to your lies about the Wyoming trip. And you're like, oh, yeah, it was great. She's like, yeah, it was great and unorganized. Let me tell you about my father and his lack of organization when it comes to these trips.
That was true.
Yeah.
That was very true. I thought I was busy, you know, making the money that pays for these trips.
Oh, my God.
And, you can't just, like, wing it in Yellowstone. I think it's, like, thousands of square miles or something.
Yeah. You need a plan.
You're not just going to show them and be like, well, let's just drive around so we see some stuff, kid. I think my kids view you as the public record on my life, Lawrence, because this is not the first time my kids have felt like they needed to make sure you had the facts and information about me.
I'm happy to be that resource for them because they're brilliant children. And I like the fact that they're like, no, that's not what happened at all. And your daughter explaining how you guys had to go to coffee and she had to figure out what it is that you guys were going to do next.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's rough. That's rough.
Everything I do, these kids are like, all right, we need to immediately report this to Grandma and Dion Miller and Lawrence Holm.
In that order? That is Grandma? Yes.
That's the order.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, they definitely tell Dion on Jason. They will tell her all the time about stuff he's out here doing.
Man, you gotta be careful because your kids will speak truths. And it's dangerous. It can be very dangerous when they do.
They allow Tony to be Tony, though, which I do think is interesting.
Who, Tony Gill?
Yeah. Your Tony daughters Gill love Tony, and they allow him to just be him. They give us a higher standard.
Yes. Tony is married, and there's a component there where his wife brings, much like my own marriage, his wife brings a lot of respectability to the equation.
Oh, that's the most important thing a sports human can do, is marry somebody like that. You need that.
I think that they kind of let a lot of Tony stuff go because they know that Steph is policing this and making sure everything stays on track.
So where are we on the Bears schedule? Like how far away are we from camp, Lawrence? Did you say 2 weeks? Something like that?
Don't the rookies report on the 19th?
Man.
I think regular camp starts. I think the whole team reports 2 weeks from today. I think the whole team is on the 22nd, and then the first practice is on the 23rd. And they've got 2 weeks of practice before they start getting into joint practices.
Yeah.
They shouldn't need any more practice on that. I mean,
first public practice is July 25th.
Okay.
So,
but it's super interesting because that in those first 2 weeks, you're going to start to get the answers that you want. You don't have to wait all the way till the opener in September to find out who Ben Johnson likes at certain positions. They're not going to still be toying around with ideas at left tackle, for example, 2 weeks in. They need to get set and get some continuity among those guys. So you're going to start seeing who's getting the reps, who's getting the ball when they're in passing drills, and who's starting at left tackle.
Yeah. Speaks, the NFL is early this year. The Hall of Fame game is July 31st.
Oh, man, that's crazy. So I'm going to
up against the trade deadline.
I'm going to have to rage against the dying of the light that is the baseball season a little bit earlier than I normally do.
No, not with a contending Cubs team.
I will not go gentle into that good night.
Speaks, you got a contending Cubs team. There'll be plenty of opportunity for us to pat our heads and rub our tummies or whatever that is. The other way around, rub our heads and pat our tummies.
At the same time. Yeah, right, exactly.
Whatever
yeah.
that thing is.
Yeah, you do the
you also have a red hot White Sox team. 4 wins in their last 9 games.
Woo,
that
boy.
Is smoking on the south side.
We actually have a Sox adjacent thing that we need
4
to
and
do.
5 in our last 9 sounds like something Matt Eberflus would throw out there as, hey, it's not as bad as it looks.
Let's go to our list. All right, let's do it.
What would be his nickname for Luis Robert?
Hurdy. Hurdy's back.
Hey, soft tissue. Come here, soft
tissue.
I'm
going to call you untradeable. Oh, well, he called himself that.
Yeah, he really did.
He did.
Come here, untradeable.
He's got a couple of weeks to get it right, though.
The nicknames would not be that creative. They'd be you're spiky and you're batty and you're glovy. I'm going to call you Rosenbag.
Hey, glovey.
Yeah. Because you pitch is the only reason.
Coach, we all have gloves. Well, whatever, but you're the one I see most often with it. Thank you, Jason.
What's going on there, stirrups? You going to get a hit today? All right. Pat on the head. On to the next guy.
Thanks, buddy. We'll talk
Thanks,
to you, Jason.
See you guys.
Later.
It's Jason Leisure. He's actually going to sit in for you next week.
Yeah, in a couple days. I'm taking a couple days during the All-Star break off.
Now, we're certain that it's only the two, right?
I'll get back to you. We'll talk about it a little
bit. Yeah,
real
later. Nice baseball guy. The toughest time. Like, hey, I'm out of here.
Hey, man. I've always been the guy who covers. I'm going to cottage. I mean, all the way back in the day. Now I'm going to cottage.
Don't worry, Tanny. I got a whole week of Is Caleb Good ready for people during All-Star week. It's going to be fire. Absolute fire.
So, look, Sox adjacent. Sometimes when people go other places and they get the old changes scenery, things can go well for them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels okay, and sometimes it feels bad. I'm scared of one, a non-Sox one. I'm scared that somebody's going to do really, really well.
There's a lot of former Sox doing well last night. Mm-hmm. And one of them might end up hurting the Cubs because
so?
Of it.
Let's see.
We'll talk about it next here on The Score.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes.
You guys are great.
You're right. Thanks, Chris.
We'll send him the book. That is Chris Ronji.
Afternoons on The Score.
That one driven out here. Back our way. Oh, my. Romy crushes one.
Romy Gonzalez.
That home run that Romy Gonzalez hit, he dropped a bomb on Fenway and the Green Monster. I've seen a lot of home runs at that ballpark, Lawrence, and a lot of video of home runs at that ballpark. That spot where that 454-foot thing landed is very infrequently visited. Like, righty power hitters of consequence. Giancarlo Stanton has gone there a few times.
I didn't Romy know Gonzalez that Romy not, had that I, in his bag.
Me neither. I mean, I haven't looked at his Savant page. It's got to be the longest home run he's ever hit by a mile.
I mean, you talk about getting every bit of it. That's an example of that.
He's one of the second basemen who were available for Rick Hahn that one spring when Leury was
around.
He was. I mean, seriously, Romy Gonzalez is going to make Sox fans have, you know,
I don't know
traitor's remorse.
I don't know about that, but it was weird to see that happen. By the way, before we're done.
Yeah. There's been nothing but raves about Romy Gonzalez this offseason. Even had a player came into my office in the offseason and said, don't you dare trade that guy. Lennon Sosa got a little taste last year. He obviously moved quickly. Those are two of the most interesting guys in that mix. Obviously, Lurie's around. Guys like Zach Remillard.
Larry's around.
And guys like Zach Remillard.
Still around.
Not necessarily Zach Remillard.
But guys like
you.
It. That's fine. Before we get out of here, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to Baseball After Dark at Wildfire in Glenview on Wednesday, July 23rd. Special guest Michael Bush, and I just found out before the show, hosted by Matt Spiegel.
I just found out this morning as well. Very excited about that.
Because I remember when it came up yesterday, I was like, usually we let people know who's hosting it.
I noticed that as well. And then I didn't say anything, but then all of a sudden, So, yeah.
Well, yes, the baseball guy should probably be doing that show.
That should be awesome. So, Baseball After Dark presented by Huntington Bank.
Tell you, Spiegs, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
I should have called Stoney and asked him who was hosting it, because he would have told us who it was.
Life is a masterpiece. Make your money story a bestseller. And by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants. They celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating wonderful memories.
Alex, can I just give away the Cubs tickets right now? Do we have to do a thing?
Sure.
Let's just give them away. All right, caller 6 at 312-540-0670. You're going to win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs in Kansas City at Wrigley Field on July 21st. It's all provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch.
I never really thought I would say that, but here he is, the Cookie Monster.
That's right. Is it Cookie Monster also sang the seventh inning stretch, Speaks.
Wow.
Really kind of punches a hole in your hole.
But he did it with respect.
He did, though.
He respected the house.
He understood what was going on.
He understood the exercise.
We are also giving away fish tickets. You may have heard Speaks make a reference to fish earlier in the show.
Yeah, that doesn't count because we hadn't told you it was coming.
But that's the only one you can do, so we're really out of luck here. So,
yeah, a lyric. If you hear me quote a fish lyric between now and the end of the show,
you call 312-540-0670, and we're going to hook you up with a pair of tickets to see Fish Sunday, July 20th at the United Center. Tickets are at Ticketmaster.com.
So, Romy Gonzalez homers, but also, holy bejesus, Andrew Vaughn in his first plate appearance with the Milwaukee Brewers. Rhys Hoskins hurt, goes on the injured list. Andrew Vaughn comes up to play first base. Pat Murphy said, I'm going to play you at first because you're slow. So I'm going to go ahead and play you over there.
It's a good place to play him.
And Andrew
Vaughn. It's really like the only place you can play him.
Oh, man. That's Yoshinobu Yamamoto on the mound, and Andrew Vaughn did this.
And now it's Vaughn, number 3 overall pick by the Chicago White Sox a few years ago out of Cal Berkeley. Makes his Brewers debut, maxed out at 21 home runs 2 years ago in 2023. Hit 19 of them a year ago. Vaughn had 16 games in AAA after the Brewers traded Aaron Civale to the White Sox for Vaughn. Hit 259 with 3 homers and drove in 16. Facing Yamamoto for the first time, much like everybody on this roster. And the 2-2. Fly ball, deep left. It is up and it is gone. Welcome to the Brew Crew, Andrew Vaughn. Yamamoto threw the slider one too many times, and Vaughn hit it into the Brewers' bullpen in deep left center. That's a way to introduce yourself to your new teammates. 3-0 Milwaukee with one swing of the bat.
That is Jeff Levering of the Brewers television crew.
I love Jeff.
Fun fact, he's the guest on today's episode of the PBP, Voices of Baseball, which just dropped a little while ago in the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts. I had not ever talked to Jeff. I really enjoyed him quite a bit.
Yeah, Jeff's a good man. He does some college basketball stuff, too. So I've had a chance to interact with him a couple of ways. And maybe the next time the Cubs and the Brewers are up, we should call Jeff and have him on.
We should do it. Yeah, he tells some incredible Bob Uecker stories and talks about the way they've honored Uecker on the broadcast, so check out the PBP. Will you be upset if Andrew Vaughn succeeds as a Brewer?
No. I think that everyone that has even a chance to succeed as a White Sox needs to get away from the White Sox. And I'm not joking about that. I just think that because things have been so bad, I don't know if anyone can flourish under the weight of the history that they have laid down over the last couple of years.
Man, that's heavy.
The way that things have gone, I think that all of them needed a change of scenery. In some cases, it's worked a little bit. In some cases, it hasn't. And we kind of, like Eloy, it hasn't really worked.
No.
Tim, it didn't work.
No. Michael Kopech, it worked. Kopech, it worked. And some of the simple stuff the Dodgers did, a good organization did.
And he spoke about that. Kopech spoke about, I just kind of needed to get out of there.
Did you see the Andrew Vaughn quote about what they said to him and what he's doing? All it was, basically, is this. They welcomed me. They said, hey, go do your thing. The message was just to simplify. Get back to what makes me good.
That's just a great organization right there.
You're good. Yeah, you seem to be good at baseball.
Good Lord, of course. That's all they said.
That's all they freaking said.
That's like the Dodgers. Hey, mix in a breaking ball here or there. Okay, and I'm dominant.
Yeah, no, but seriously, hold on. The White Sox told him that too, though.
That's my point. Of course. That's my point. Like, yeah, it's obvious things sometimes, and just a different person telling you, and different results.
Hey, man, they told Kopech. The Dodgers told Kopech, just throw your stuff over the plate. And it's hearing it from a good organization. That's part of the change of scenery mindset thing, is just that you trust the people you're listening to instead.
And if you make a mistake as a Dodger, here's Shohei Ohtani, here's Mookie Betts, here's Freddie Freeman, here's Max Muncy, here's Will Smith, here's Teoscar Hernandez. They might be able to cover your mistake.
Yeah, that's for sure.
If you, with the White Sox over the last couple of years, you're walking a tightrope. And you're probably not going to recover if there is a mistake. So maybe you end up putting more pressure on yourself and then you can't perform.
Yeah. And so when you get to a good org, you're like, oh, yeah, a weight lifts and you trust the advice. Lonzo Ball is now a Cleveland Cavalier. And I was reading some of these quotes and I'm like, oh, no. Lonzo's going to be really good there, isn't he? He's going to fit in really nicely with Donovan Mitchell and like, I think the world of Lonzo's game, if he's healthy, I think the world of his game, if he's able to stay healthy. Here's Lonzo Ball and why he's excited to be on the Cavaliers.
Really just to have the chance to win. I mean, obviously we know how good the Cavs are, you know, how good they've been in the past. And I think that this year we have a great chance to go for it all. And that's really all I'm focused on.
You've gone on social media talking about how hungry and happy you are to be able to play back this game that you love. How important is that for you? Just be able to have fun and play the game again.
I mean, basketball is, you know, my life. I've been playing since I was 6 years old, so about 20 years in now. So it's really all I know. So I'm just thankful and, you know, like I said, blessed to be able to just be here playing for anybody, let alone the Cavs. Basketball is all about winning to me, so you can't win without getting to the playoffs. So been on a couple teams that have been to the playoffs. You know, obviously I couldn't, you know, get out there and run with the guys. But like I said, hopefully this year, you know, I have high hopes and, you know, the sky's the limit.
Ask me the same question, Lawrence. Ask me the one I asked you about Andrew Vaughn. Will I be pissed?
Will you be pissed if Lonzo Ball is really good for Cleveland?
Yes.
I'm not going to be.
I realized.
I hope that he is, honestly.
Well, so do I. So do I. I root for him. I'll be more pissed at the Bulls because they chose to keep him instead of getting a draft pick. And under this idea of, like, let's try and be decent. And then they let him go for a one-way player. When I really like Lonzo's game. So, like, I don't think they maximized the asset, and I like his game. So if he does well and he stays healthy, I'm going to be like, look at you freaking idiots. Look what you did.
I would love it if he was well and could play well.
I'll love that for him.
I have concerns that his body is not going to hold up, and maybe finally the Bulls got to that place, and they're like, we might as well get a healthy body and see where we're at. You know how I'm going to summer league later on this week?
Yeah.
I ran across this, and it pertains to Lonzo Ball. This is the 2017 Lakers Summer League roster, okay? Lonzo Ball, Vander Blue, Thomas Bryant, Alex Caruso, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram.
Wow, yeah.
Kyle Kuzma, David Nwaba, and Ivica Zubac. That was their summer league roster in 2017.
That was the thing where the Lakers were like, all right, we don't have a star, but we're just going to throw a whole bunch of good young draft picks together and see if it works. And that team was interesting. And then they traded Lonzo and other pieces and Ingram to New Orleans for Anthony Davis. right? That was the deal. It's like they had all these pieces, and it's like, well, let's trade a few of them and get AD, and then that works.
Caruso walk. Like, there's like all the. It's crazy.
Yeah,
there's good players on here, man.
I liked watching that team, young Lonzo and young Ingram.
There are a lot of teams that you don't like watching, though. One in particular.
Damn right.
We need to talk about. And there's another one that I need to talk about because the Cubs are playing them tonight. We'll discuss next.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Former Bears tight end Dez Clark.
Spiegel, we never met in person, but I pay attention to the radio when I'm back in Chicago, and I still enjoy tuning in to 670 The Score.
So what do you think of when you see Lawrence?
I mean, you still look the same, so you probably still got a little hater in you. but we'll see.
Afternoons on The Score.
Trot Nixon and Jason Veritek.
That's in the right field, short. Timo coming on. He's got a good arm, but Torrey's got good speed. So here comes Torrey. He's going to give it a shot. And here's the throw. Oh, my gosh. He just leveled Jamie Burke, who did not have the ball.
Well, if Jamie wasn't blocking the play, this is a cheap shot.
That's what I'm saying. I want to see where Jamie was setting up.
Well, Torrey Hunter went out of his way to run over Jamie right there.
That was a terrible moment, and all of us White Sox fans knew it. That was the moment when you realized, oh, they're not just better, they're tougher, and they are playing hardball. Poor Jamie Burke.
Maybe a pivotal moment, though, for the franchise.
I think so.
I just picture Kenny watching that game that night and just wanting to retool everything.
Yeah, being like, we gotta start from scratch. Yeah, They're at the top of my. There are three teams since we're talking about hate, and I'm gonna leave the hate to you in a minute.
Oh no, you go, because I brought up teams that I hate because of one that is really scuffling right now, and you were like, "Well, I hate one that's playing the Cubs tonight."
Yeah, I'm not. I can't stand the Twins. I can't stand. And they've got players that I like. Like, I love Byron Buxton. Like, watching him
watching
him track a ball in center field is a thing of beauty.
Beautiful athlete,
but. The Brad Radkes and stupid Joe Nathan coming out of the bullpen, and LaTroy Hawkins, even though I love LaTroy.
Such a good dude.
Yeah. Joe Mauer hitting doubles off the left field wall. Justin Morneau hitting home runs over the right field wall.
Go ahead. Say the name.
Corey Koski.
Yeah, keep going. You'll get to the name of
Johan Santana?
No. It's just the classic.
Lou Ford.
No, somebody like
Eddie
that.
Guardado. Eddie Guardado. Yeah.
No, it's the classic, like, this guy is beating us? This freaking guy? Go ahead. Sort of like Lou Ford.
Jock Jones?
Nick Punto.
Oh, God.
What the hell, man?
So
Nick Punto's beating you, you're like, this is just a pox.
Louis Rivas, Shannon Stewart.
Yeah, man.
Christian Guzman.
Yeah, man. You know it.
I understand.
Yeah, and look, there are three teams for me where it's still visceral.
Okay.
It's visceral with the Twins, the weird-ass Minnesota Twins. Shout out to Julie Swyka. She likes when I say that because she feels the same way. She's got the same level of hate. For the Twins.
Weird-ass Minnesota Twins.
Damn right, CC. The New York Knicks, and you know that I enjoyed watching them get beat in the playoffs.
I know you do.
And Marquette.
Oh, Marquette. What do you got against Al McGuire? What did Al McGuire ever do to you? For God's sakes.
That was back when they had respect.
What did Doc Rivers ever do to you? You know? I get you. All right, so you got those three. I'm just going to focus on one because, like, my Yankees hate is just, I lean into it.
Didn't you make a bet?
Well, I did. I bet on the Red Sox to have a better record than the Yankees this year, which is still possible. But before they beat the Mets on Sunday night, the Yankees had lost 18 of 27 games, and the Blue Jays just blew by them in the standings on the help of a sweep over the course of the few days before the weekend. And when I saw Aaron Judge get hit in the coconut with a baseball by his own teammate, Anthony Volpe, I like Aaron Judge as a dude. Seems like a good dude. But man, I thought it was absolutely delicious. You know what they do? They do the thing at the end of the half inning when an infielder will throw the ball to the outfielder. Oh, look at us. We're throwing the ball around. It's just part of what we do. And Volpe threw the ball at Judge and hit him directly into the coconut.
Yeah, I don't like that. No. But oh, yeah, text your, yeah, Jason Kubel. Get on out of here.
There you go.
Get on out of here with that nonsense.
Just amazing to see Judge get hit. And then he was like, he had to wear a bandage to go back up to home plate.
It looked like something out of like the Nutty Professor or something like that, where it's like, here, or Naked Gun. Like, here's Aaron Judge with this huge Band-Aid on his head. Yeah. What happened to him? And his teammate threw him the ball that hit him in the head.
And just sad Michael Kay makes me happy. I like when Michael Kay is sad on those broadcasts.
So you like when the Toronto guy got after him a little bit?
Got after Michael Kay.
Oh, you didn't hear?
No.
The Toronto play, I guess Michael Kay, he was previewing the series, and he was saying how, like, he didn't think that Toronto was, like, a first-place team. And I think he meant it literally. And then they took it not that way. And so after they swept the Yankees, one of the Blue Jays guys, and you know Canadians, like, they're not usually...
Not Dan Shulman?
It wasn't Dan Shulman.
Was it Ben Shulman, his son, who does work for them?
I'm not sure. Okay. But someone went after Michael Kay, and then Michael Kay got real mad. Yeah. He got real. He was like, I'm not a fanboy like you are. And I'm like, I don't think that's quite accurate, Michael, but go off.
Yeah, it was Jamie Campbell of Sportsnet in Toronto took a gig.
Toronto.
Yeah, took a dig, excuse me. He took a gig at Sportsnet in Toronto. Then he took a dig at Michael Kay, is what he did. So, yeah. So I really love when the Yankees lose. It just does something very...
The Yankees lose!
And yet I love Dave Sims.
You know
that's
your man.
That's my guy. But he's not going to be doing this series this weekend. He's going to be at the HBCU Swingman Classic for the third year. Dave Sims will be doing that broadcast of that game, Ken Griffey Jr.'s game.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Good to be the man. Mm-hmm. Good for Dave. I'm so happy for Dave.
Yeah, he's a good dude, even though he works for the freaking Yankees.
Wow. Speaking of hate. My partner.
No, see.
Yeah.
You think it's, I don't think it's hate.
You hate it. You hate this thing.
I've always hated this thing, and I really like the player. So I want the player to stop doing the thing that I hate, because I'm not the only one who hates it.
There is a Chicago player who's doing something that Spiegs hates. He's going to tell you who it is and what they're doing, and we're going to discuss it next on The Score.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album, or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers, or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.